All right.
Oh, it's the Roller on the Barrel podcast. On the line tonight, in this phone interview, I have John Heil Blackjack from the Solano Silver Star Baseball Club out in California. We are trying to reach people from coast to coast and from border to border on vintage baseball to get the word out. Want to talk to everybody around the country to find out just how they do it in their area. And today we're heading out to the second largest state in, I don't know, it's a big state, California. It's John Heil. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
Great. What do you say we do it for real this time?
Sounds great. Yeah.
John, how'd you get your nickname Blackjack?
So I actually got that when I was playing softball many years ago, and I played like every position on the field. Somebody said, you know, you're kind of like a jack of all trades. You're playing pitcher one game, next game you're playing second base, next time you're out in the outfield. So they said, you're kind of the jack of all trades. And then they decided, well, let's just call you Blackjack, you know, as a nickname. So that was my nickname back then. And then when I started playing the vintage baseball, I mentioned it to somebody and they really liked it. And so it's been kind of stuck with me as well.
Yeah, so you're the captain of the Solano Silver Star Baseball Club, is that correct?
That's right. Yes, I am. I just started to take over those duties in the middle of last season in between our spring and fall schedules. So, yep, I'm the captain of the team.
And you originally started out in the Central Valley League with another team. You started out with the Athletic. I know all this information about you. It's crazy. You started out with the Athletic Baseball Club of Woodland, and then you moved to Aetna because it was closer. Tell us about that, how you started out with the Athletic.
Yeah, so I first I found out about the league actually from a coworker who plays with the Sacramento team. He told me about it. I showed up, and they put me on the Athletic Club of Woodland right off the bat, wearing the straw hat and the green and white checkered shirts, which really breathe. And so I was on that team for a little while, and then they said, well, you know, you live in Fairfield, which is close to Vacaville, you know, maybe it'd be better if you were on the Aetna Club of Dixon. So that's when the switch happened. And then towards the end of the last season, we decided to change the team name to the Solano Silver Stars. And the reason is because we were looking at probably playing a little bit in Vacaville as well as Dixon, because Vacaville's got a larger number of people. We can probably grab more people interested in playing baseball and grow our sport a little bit here. So that was the thought process there. So we're excited about this upcoming season as the first season under the new name of Solano Silver Stars.
Well, and when you're an association like this, where you're starting off with four clubs, and is this the second year?
Yes, it is. Second year, correct.
So you started off with four clubs in the area, and in California, where there wasn't really a vintage presence. I believe you have some stuff going on to the south, but they play with later year rules. So getting members has got to be a little difficult out there. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. That's accurate, yeah. There is some vintage baseball going on in the Bay Area. In fact, we did play some teams before I actually joined the league, but we're going to be playing one April 4th out of the Bay Area. We're going to be playing them at Golden Gate Park, so we're excited about that. But, yeah, actually, there hasn't been much out here, and so it's really kind of, you know, got the Facebook presence, but word of mouth, trying to, you know, get to go to different events and introduce people to the sport and get some interest that way. It is challenging, though, because a lot of people didn't know about it. I didn't know about it until I found out from a coworker. And it's been a total blast and really enjoying it under the 1864 rules. Last year, actually, we played against the Cincinnati Red Stockings, which played by 1869 rules. They came all the way out to California and came on one of the old Western trains into old Sacramento. And then we ended up playing some multiple games with them, and it was quite interesting, quite a lot of fun, actually. Yep.
Yeah, I heard about that event from Matt Stone, actually. How did that event go and turn out, and how many games were played?
Yeah, Matt Stone's been really instrumental in a lot of things we do. Brandywine, as he goes by in his nickname, he's been he was the one who founded the league originally and started working on the Cincinnati Red Stockings event. We played, I recall, at least two games at one field, and then the next day we played an additional two games at another field. We kind of mixed it up. The first game we played 1869 rules, which means you have to catch the ball in the air to get it out. And then the second game we played, we actually mixed it up where we put some players from our league on their team and vice versa. So we had kind of players from each team. We also played our rules, 1864 rules, and then we also played a game where we had a Bay Area club come out and play as well. So we actually, I think we played total four games in 2 days, and it was really a lot of fun.
Getting a club to travel all the way out to Sacramento from Cincinnati, that's incredible that they were willing to do that. Wow.
Oh, it was absolutely incredible, and their players were very talented. I recall one of their players, Cool Papa, he was quite a good hitter and a good fielder, and you know, they play by those 1869 rules, which means you got to catch it in the air, which is challenging. And so, you know, they were smart, and they wanted us to take the field off in the first game. The advantage, of course, being that the ball is a lot harder at first, and when you hit it a few times, it gets softer, so catching is not quite as painful.
Right.
So that was a smart move on their part. But yeah, they were very talented team, and we were excited to have an opportunity to play them out here in Sacramento. So that was a blast.
What kind of did you get a good turnout for that?
We did, actually. Our attendance fans were, we did have a good amount of fans at all the games. And we do actually pretty well in most of our games. We get decent attendance at them, particularly when we had a 4th of July game we did last year that was really well attended at one of the parks, and we advertised it, you know, get word of mouth in the local newspaper and things like that. But yeah, the Cincinnati games were very well attended, and the fans got to see some pretty cool vintage baseball in different ways, 1869 and 1864 rules. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. A special event getting that specific club and the long distance. They're not going to see anything like that all the time. So they're kind of spoiled in just their first year, people in that area spoiled with what a great vintage event happened out there. So I hope that's not lost on anybody. You can't just pull that out of your hat whenever you want.
Oh, no, absolutely not lost on that's for sure. In fact, the Cincinnati Red Stockings knew a former major leaguer, and I'm going to forget his name now, but he came out actually for the game at the end of the game and said a few words to the teams and everything like that. So that was pretty neat. So they definitely had some interest in coming out, and was, you know, Brandywine was really instrumental. Curtis, one of our, who's now a commissioner of our league, did a fantastic job as well. And I'm going to probably forget somebody else, but DJ Teach, one of our, was also very instrumental. We have some really good folks in our league that, you know, have really organized and put a lot of effort into these events. And so it does take a lot of folks to really get these things to come off really well. So, but yeah, it was an exciting moment for a lot of us to get to play that team. It was cool too, because when they're on the train kind of going by and waving and everything, and they had their really cool uniforms. They got some awesome uniforms, red socks, red hats, and the white unis with the Cincinnati logos on them. They're really cool. So that was a pretty neat moment for all of our teams and the fans that were there.
Absolutely. Now, you guys are, you're a member of the Central Valley Baseball Association or league. You're in a league, all four of your clubs kind of work with each other. And you do a spring and a fall schedule, as you told me earlier, but no one heard that. And so you got the spring schedule coming up. So you play all of your dates, which is a really cool thing, are all doubleheaders. It's almost like the new XFL. But you do everybody plays on the same date. So you got four dates, and everybody shows up and plays. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a new thing we're doing this year. We didn't do that last year. It was more, we did doubleheaders, but it was, you know, people would pretty much stick to the team they were on. But But if you had like a shortage of players, then we might get some other people to stay and play on another game. But next year, yeah, we're doing it where if y'all, you know, whoever shows up and wants, if they want to play both games, they can. And just depending on how many people we've got and trying to even out the teams. But yeah, we've got, everybody's got their team that they're associated with, but then, you know, you can jump in and play for another team if they're short on players. And I've played many doubleheaders. It's a blast. I mean, you're worn out by about the middle of the second game, but all the stealing, running around the bases and everything. But it's great exercise and just an absolute blast.
How much distance is between all of your clubs for travel-wise to get together?
Not too much. Yeah, not too much. Sacramento is the furthest for me. Sacramento is, well, for me, it's about 47 miles from where I live. You know, really, I'd say Dixon is the one that's the furthest west, and which is now Solano, Silver Stars, which would be Dixon and Vacaville. But that's really only maybe, I'd say, you know, 30 to 40 minutes to Sacramento. So, you know, I'd say mileage-wise, you're looking at maybe 30 miles, 35 miles, something like that. So the furthest distance is 30 to 35 miles, and then the other clubs are closer. Like Dixon's only like maybe a 10-minute drive to Davis, and then, you know, Davis to Sacramento is probably like a 15-20-minute drive. So, yeah, the longest would be that 30 to 35 minutes. They're all pretty close. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That works out nice. We mentioned Matt Stone earlier, being the front runner for getting this underway in its first year. And he has somewhat recently stepped down. And correct me if I'm wrong. It was due to family issues, wanting to be with his family more. I guess I don't know the very specifics of it. Can you give us some information without us being too?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I am. That's a great guy. I really appreciate him, and he was so welcoming when I came on board. But yeah, for him, it's family. You know, he just the amount of time he invested in trying to get the sport off the ground and doing different events and all the things around that. It took up a lot of time away from his. He's got a young child, and so he was trying to, you know, balance that, of course. And so, so for him, he needed to step down in order to spend some more time with his wife and child, a very young child. I've met them. They're great people. And we're just real happy and thrilled to have Curtis, the Hammer is his nickname, as our new commissioner. But yeah, really appreciative of the work that Matt did, as the original commissioner of our league, getting it all started. He's just so welcoming. He keeps this really a good, clean sport, you know, and our folks are, you know, we're always welcoming new folks and just really, you know, making sure we play a nice game and everybody feels good about it after the game's over too. So I think that setting that tone that Matt set really made a difference, and it's really made our league a special league to play in, where we feel like, you know, you can play and it's not all about the winning. It's also about the camaraderie and the fun that's involved in it. So,
and I'm sure you're not done with Matt Stone. I'm sure that's a temporary situation.
Yeah, Matt still plays. I see him all the time, and it's always fun playing with him. In fact, he's going to umpire our game April 4th against the Bay Area team, and so he's done a little bit of umpiring here and there too, but. So yeah, definitely not. He's definitely still there and involved and a great teammate, someone you definitely want to play with and enjoy having him in our league. And thankful really for all the work he did to set all this up too originally.
Yeah. I wish, my podcast would have came along while he was still, the head of it. I'm sure I'll get around to interviewing him in the future, but him and I over the last couple of years would text back and forth because he's starting that out there, and I've got this Michigan festival that I put on out here, and we would swap ideas and throw stuff back and forth a little bit.
Is that over in Frankenmuth by any chance?
yeah, it is. He would
I
always
heard about that. I spent 2 years in Michigan. I lived there in Lansing, so I remember the Frankenmuth area and how Christmas time, man, that place is such a cool place at Christmas. But yeah, I remember their festivals and everything too. So Yeah, I heard about that a while back, and I was like, oh, wow, yeah, Frankenmuth, that'd be neat to go over there and play some baseball.
It's we got a really good setup. We're right behind the Frankenmuth River Play Shops, which is the outdoor kind of shopping area, and they're our main sponsor. So you can actually look for us on ESPN3 in June.
Oh, really?
Well, we have an Uncle Sam tournament that happens in the festival. So most of the festival is just a very laid-back festival, play teams you've never played before atmosphere. But inside of that, we have an Uncle Sam tournament, which we take teams from all the different states that are coming. And the final three matches are live streamed on ESPN3.
And that's awesome.
It went pretty cool. Went pretty good last year, so we're doing it again this year. And that's Father's Day weekend, if you want to tell all your friends.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'll definitely do that. That's awesome.
Matt would always tell me he'd love to get a team together to come out to the festival. I'm like, I don't know. You guys live in California. That might be a little presumptuous of you. And he's like, no, I'm going to try.
That was Matt for you. That was Matt. You know, he would organize events and do things. Nothing was out of the realm of possibility. And so, you know, it's definitely something I know Curtis is looking at too and thinking about. There's been some talk about going to a tournament in Gettysburg. Vintage baseball tournament over there in Gettysburg in Pennsylvania every year or so. We're talking about maybe at some point participating in that. So yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, anything's possible. You never know, but yeah, I have to keep our options open, right?
Yeah, Gettysburg is, I've actually never been there because that runs in July and I'm a beer delivery guy, and getting time off in July, that's hard. We need all hands on deck in July. So I've actually never gotten the chance to go to Gettysburg, but it's like the Holy Grail out here. It's not just the baseball. It's the history. It's going to all of the historical sites around there. And I guess it's a beautiful place to be. And I hope to get there someday.
Yeah. I've been there before. For a while, my in-laws were living up there in Pennsylvania. Got over there. It's a pretty neat place to see. The history is just incredible. So playing baseball there would be pretty amazing, actually, I would think, you know. But long way for us to go, of course, being in California. So
it's a long way for you guys to go anywhere to find some unusual vintage event, isn't it? I mean, where else can you go?
Yeah, it is. That's true. We've talked about also maybe doing something in Southern California or Arizona or like that, but so there's things in the works. I know Curtis has got some ideas and is working with the board. We have a group of folks that are on the board, kind of help to make decisions and vote on things for the league and events and stuff like that. So in fact, we're meeting next Saturday to kind of talk about this upcoming season and kind of get ready for that. So yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you never know, but we are a little bit further out. We have to kind of keep that in mind, you know.
Yeah, I just found out recently about vintage baseball in Arizona, which I found out coincidentally because my son moved out there recently, and he just happened to be sitting next to somebody at his job that is on a vintage baseball club. Just complete coincidental. Wow. And they're the Tempe Tip Tops from Arizona. So I did some investigating, and yeah, they, sure enough, they got a small, it's kind of a smaller situation like you guys have right there.
Yeah,
and they probably, like you, can only play in spring and fall. I don't know if they do two segments like you guys do, but yeah, I can't imagine playing.
That works out pretty well for us. The heat is just, because it can be pretty hot in the summertime in Sacramento and those surrounding areas. You know, it's not unheard of to have 100-degree days for, you know, multiple weeks and things like that. So, you know, we kind of, you know, that's why we do the spring and fall schedules, kind of play around the weather so that people don't have that problem where you're going to get a, you know, heat stroke, or you're going to be out in the sun for a long time and just that strong heat. So it's worked out really well, I mean, I think. And also we play earlier in the morning, which helps out, you know, for getting the fields and also just kind of, you know, it's cooler too in the mornings as well. So
what do you,
it's a blast.
What do you guys do for a start time out there?
Yeah, we start at we do a game at 9, and then we do one at 11:30.
Oh, yeah.
And that usually works out pretty well for us as far as time. We get to the field, like, you know, some of the board members get to the field a little bit earlier, like, you know, around 8 or 8:15, actually, typically, and then get the field all set up, measure out the bases and all that kind of stuff, and then people start showing up around, you know, 8:30, 8:45, and then we get that first game kicked off at 9. And usually pretty cool, a little bit different kind of field conditions sometimes, because you got the field might be a little bit more damp, and so the ball might kind of not bounce up. And our sport, it's really important, because in the 1864 rules, the bounce and then catching it off for an out is like really probably the easiest way to get outs, really. And so if the ball's not bouncing because of the wet turf, then it's, you know, then you got to be trying to catch it in the air or just try to, you know, avoid that situation. So it's a little trickier that first game because of that, those conditions. And then a second game dries it up and it bounces a lot more. So,
well, that ball gets so, when it gets wet, it gets heavy. That throwing that ball. Where do you guys get your balls from?
You know, actually, off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I don't know if I can remember that off the top of my head. I know we're ordering some more, and through the Vintage Association, there's a way to order some and then get some reimbursement for it. So I know there's some work on doing that. Some of our folks, the other manager on my team, is looking at doing that and getting some more balls. But yeah, if Matt started that up, and there's like a place to specifically get them from for the Vintage League.
So I think you're referring to the Vintage Baseball Factory. Which,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is where most of the balls come from. So those balls, yeah, absolutely, yeah, exactly. When they get wet, it's like a small cannonball trying to heave that over to first base.
That's right.
Now, we don't play early morning games out here in Michigan and Ohio generally, unless it's a tournament situation where you gotta get going early so you can get the games in. And wow, those early ones. Woo! Yeah, we don't like to play those.
Well, yeah, Michigan will be a lot cooler. You want to play a little later when it gets a little warmed up a little bit too, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What was the last name of Curtis that has taken over for Matt Stone?
Curtis. Let me see here. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head here. I guess my memory isn't what it used to be.
That's fine.
Let's see here. I could find him, though. Cool. I'm sure I've got him in here. So, Piatt. P-I-A-T-T, Curtis Piatt. He is our commissioner, and we are absolutely just delighted to have him as our commissioner. He's a great guy, and he runs the Sacramento team as well, along with DJ Latcham, Teach. And, the Hammers kind of sense it. I use his bat a lot in our games, and he's got a really nice bat he ordered in, and it says the Hammer on it. And I grab that bat all the time, and he's like trying to put the curse on it, because when I go up there to hit with that, you know, he's like, I'm going to curse this bat now for you. And of course, if I get a hit, he's like, the curse didn't work that time, you know. So, yeah, he's a great guy. We're happy to have him as our commissioner for this upcoming season. I'm sure he'll carry the torch that Matt started and keep this league going strong.
Do you guys do any other events than just your four doubleheaders for the spring? Like, is there a scheduling event where everybody gets together, or any kind of end of the year banquet situation or any of that?
Nothing like that, but what we do is we do other games throughout the year. Like I mentioned, that 4th of July game, there's been some participation in the Thanksgiving parades out in Woodland. We did a Vacaville like demonstration of showing the different rules within the game. So we're always scoring the game at these different events and looking for those opportunities. Typically at the games, you know, after doubleheader, you know, a lot of us will go out and get, a drink somewhere, catch some lunch, get some beers. Some of my guys really like to try out the different types of beers out here in California. So we'll go to different, more beer places specifically. And so you just a group, usually after the game, we'll get together for something afterwards. And that's kind of our social thing. But we also did, actually this past year, we did a really cool thing where we decided to do a fantasy football league too to raise money for the league as well. And so, you know, if you played the fantasy football, you entered a certain amount of money and that went towards the league. And that was fun. I think there was 12 of us or 10 of us that played in the fantasy football league. I think it was 10. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And we had like a draft over at Keach's house and kind of went through and drafted different players. Some people had a little more familiarity with fantasy football than others, so it was kind of interesting sure. kind of watching it play out. But yeah, but it was fun, yeah. So we do different things like that and get together. And yeah.
Do you guys consider your spring segment and your fall segment as one season?
No, I think we do consider it two separate seasons, really. So if I recall correctly, it was the spring season last year where at the end of the season, the Davis Club, which is the elite club, and the Sacramento team, both of those two teams had the same number of victories. And so when they were playing, it was like, okay, this is for the best record in the league this season, in the spring season. And so that was pretty neat. But I think normally, yeah, they're two separate seasons. We don't combine them as far as like overall records and things like that. So you know, kind of keep them separate.
I'm looking at the Olita Baseball Club Facebook page out of Davisville right now. Their cover photo is a field that they're playing on, and out in center field, it looks like some condos or some houses. Is that their home field?
Yeah, we've moved it around a little bit sometimes here, but yeah, there's actually, I'm trying to remember the Davis field as much. There's condos, I think. You're right. It's like a playground, like kind of on the one side, and then there's this really nice, large green field, and then there's like houses or condos kind of on the side or on the distance, kind of around it, yeah. So you could, I mean, you know, usually it's the, if you have a left-handed batter, sometimes that left-hander could kind of hit it over where it's going to get closer to the houses over on the other side. It's a pretty cool field. We like it. We do practices there sometimes too. Each field's kind of got a different feel to it, and you kind of have to, you know, figure out what the advantages and disadvantages are some of the fields to kind of figure out where to position yourself when you're playing and kind of how the ball reacts to different things within those fields. So I think the Sacramento club's field is probably one of the nicer fields we have out of the four different ones we play on. But I do like that Davis one. It's a pretty nice field. A lot of room to move around from in distance wise. You can definitely get it quite a ways, you know, as far as hitting it before you have an issue. Whereas I think our field in Woodland is one where you can kind of hit it where you could actually get it to the point where it's going to go, you know, under the street. Not very common. It's been done a couple of times, but I think one of them bounced in the street and actually bounced in the driveway of somebody across. But that field is if you got a good slugger at the plate, it can actually go beyond the field. But I've only seen that done a few times in the two seasons that we had last year.
I'm looking at the athletic field right now, and it looks like they play in the outfield of an actual baseball field. It looks like the view from the catcher center field, way out in center field, is like the backstop of a baseball field. Is that correct? Must be like a park they play at.
Yeah, I don't think that's there anymore. I don't remember we usually typically avoid those baseball backdrops and everything too, as far as the standard. Cause sometimes I think we played at a field before that did have one of those, but we don't play really where it is.
Right. Yeah. This is way, way out in center field. It's not being the
that pitch. Could be. I don't remember that because maybe it's never been hit that far before, but yeah, I don't remember that particular piece of information, but yeah, it can bounce. The one in Woodland, though, there's like an area where there's people can get like have a picnic or whatever under sort of a overhang, and it can bounce over there. So we have to kind of be careful because we don't want it bouncing and hitting somebody if they're having eating over there. But that hasn't been a problem really at this point. But you know, you got to kind of play back a little bit so you don't want it to bounce over there. But yeah, each field has a little bit different thing. But I think the one in Sacramento is probably the one we have the least challenges with as far as, you know, a ball going somewhere where we probably don't want it to go, you know.
Sure.
Because we want to make sure we don't injure anybody or anything like that. So, yeah.
You know, I'm looking at the Sacramento Baseball Club's uniforms, and they're a little unusual. They got, it looks like they have the normal black Dickies pants. They have a white shirt that's got a black line that comes straight up the button area in the middle of the shirt with a little black collar. And their hat looks like it's a six-panel hat, and it's black and white, different panels. It's kind of an interesting-looking look that they have going on.
Yeah, they have more of a dark, it's a dark blue and white kind of like hat, and it's like the old style baseball cap. It's like I said, dark, kind of a navy blue and white, and then okay. They have the white shirts, and then they have dark blue pants they wear. So their colors are pretty much dark navy blue and white.
Okay,
and they're nice. I mean, they're nice look. It's one of the nicer looks, I think, if we have as far. But the nice thing is about our league is we have every team has like a really unique look. So you got that the dark blue and white and kind of the traditional old baseball cap for the Sacramento team. The Davisville team has like a sort of a traditional hat with being a brown, and then they've got a brown tie with the white shirt and brown pants. And then we just changed our uniforms because we used to have these more Western kind of tan vests with black shirts and black kind of, I don't know exactly, I think you kind of call them like mobster hats kind of, but they're like the old style hats. And then the Woodland team has the straw hats with the green and white checkered shirts, which are really nice lightweight shirts. And then they wear the black pants. But, you know, Solana Silver Stars, we just changed our uniforms. So now we're going to have the more cowboy hat, black cowboy hat with the maroon or burgundy bandana and the gray old Western shirts with black pants. So we're excited about that, rolling that out this year. It should be fun. And we got, you know, so we all have kind of different looks going on, which is really nice. It kind of adds to the variety of the sport.
So let me ask you this, John. If you hit a ball in the gap and you're going to second, does that cowboy hat arrive with you at second?
You know, I haven't tested it out yet, but I had someone else I know who was at a practice because we just bought these like in December in preparation for our season in spring, and we're going to be doing a practice probably in a couple of weeks. But we did a practice about 2 weeks ago, and I wasn't able to make the practice. It was like for the whole team, for the whole league actually. And so one of the guys on my team did go and wear the cowboy hat, and he said that when you're running, he said, yeah, it does, it can come off, but he said the bigger flight issue, I guess, but not really if you get used to it, is that if you're fielding, that when you kind of look up to catch a ball, that the back of the rim of the hat touches your shoulder and kind of could distract you if you're not used to it. But I think that was kind of the one thing I'd heard about it. But otherwise, I think they said it stayed on pretty well for the most part. And so I'm guessing, you know, as long as it's on pretty snug, you should be able to make it around second and with that hat on and intact. So we'll find out soon now.
Sure. So, sure.
Looking forward to it. Yep.
You're way out in California and you guys, you feel kind of cut off. So we don't really know a lot about you guys or the teams. Do any of these teams that are in the Central Valley, do they have any history or did you have to kind of take some creative, did you have to make it up?
No, there's definitely some history there. There's some teams that existed, and there's some able to take some history from those. So when the teams originally were formed, there was some of that brought into play. And actually, a lot of the uniforms we got were the funding for a lot of the uniforms and things like that came from different historical groups in the area. California Humanities, I'm trying to remember some of the other ones, but the Schwimm Foundation, there was another historical group, but they basically provided the funding for these uniforms. And yeah, the a lot of it was based on the teams that did exist in these areas, the vintage teams. So yeah, there is some history there. And we were actually doing that with the Solana Silver Stars. We were trying to find something that would look traditional for something that would be worn in those times. So yeah, these different uniforms were all picked with that in mind as well. And we have a really cool umpire who shows up and wearing the historical look of the time of 1864, what they would wear at that time as an umpire. And so that's kind of cool too. Wayne, our umpire that goes to most of the games as well. So he dresses up in the full garb for each of the games that we have.
Well, having an umpire that's willing to do that definitely adds to the presentation. I don't think sometimes that players really fully understand the importance of having that kind of umpire that's willing to put in the work, knows the rules, is there for you, and is something that if you do have people come out to the games, they're seeing this umpire. It's an important piece, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. And he's kept it more consistent that way because you know what you're going to expect with the rules and how they work and when strikes and balls get called and all that stuff. And so, yeah, it's been helpful. And I think he's made most of our games. There's only been maybe one or two he didn't. And we would have somebody else, you know, manage the umpiring for that. But it's much better when you have a consistent umpire for an entire game or even, like I said, entire season or something like that. It certainly helps with the consistency of what to expect and having that person knowledgeable with the rules and unbiased as well. So those are all good things, you know. So I think it's been real good. Wayne's been real interested in that. He's been, seems to be very much into it as well. So it's been great.
What would you say is your favorite, and you don't have a large number of memories to choose from as you've only been there for a season, but what would you say your favorite on-the-field memory is so far?
Oh, wow, there's been a lot. I think for me, personally, it was interesting because one of the games, and I could talk about just many different things. There's just there's so many good guys in our league, good players, but also good teammates and good fellows. So very much good sportsmanship. But I think the one that kind of stands out for me in my memory just was really exciting for me was I played one of the games the Sacramento team needed an extra person. The other team was not my usual Edna Dixon team. I think it might have been Davis or somebody else that was playing them that day. I can't remember now. But what was interesting and important about it, so I got on the Sacramento team, and I don't play for them very often. They usually have plenty of players. They're one of the teams that has probably more players than others, and so they have very little issue with filling their lineup every time we play. But they just, for some reason, they had a shortage that one day, and so I ended up playing on their team. And it went, the game went 11 innings, and it was the bottom of the 11th inning, and I ended up getting a hit. I think I stole, if I recall correctly, I stole second and I stole third, and then there was like a little kind of ground ball that sort of went halfway to between the catcher and third base, and I just took off for home. And I don't like to slide too much. I'm not great at sliding, especially at home plate, but I ended up making it in, and the team was all there to, you know, high five and kind of do that, what you see in baseball sometimes when you have that celebration at the end when you have a walk-off or something like that. So that was pretty exciting. I hadn't seen that. I think that's the only extra inning game we've ever played that I recall. So, just to be able to, you know, score the winning run was really exciting and fun. So that was a good moment. I enjoyed that.
Do you have a good story about another vintage player? Perhaps something embarrassing.
Something embarrassing. Well, gosh,
doesn't have to be.
It's interesting. We have a lot of good nicknames out there. There's some nicknames that, you know, so that they'll give. I think it's the Sacramento team that gives a nickname to when somebody new. They usually have a nickname they give them just for that first game until they can figure out what their nickname is going to be. But it's interesting because I'm thinking about it, and there's a guy on our team. He plays actually, I think, more on the Woodland team, the Athletic Club of Woodland. His nickname's Duck, but the guy can hit it like he's probably the best hitter I can think of we've got in the league, and he can just hammer the ball. And so for the nickname of Duck, you know, you just wouldn't expect necessarily a guy named Duck to be hitting the ball a mile, you know, or
unless
constantly hammering the ball.
Unless he's referring to what you have to do after he hits the ball.
Waddle around the bases.
Well, I'm saying if he hits the ball, you have to duck.
Yeah, that's true.
it could have been that. I don't know.
He's got some power for sure, and it's it's fun. But we've got, yeah, we've got some interesting nicknames in our league, like Cupcake and Batman, and I mentioned Hammer and Peach, and just, yeah, some really cool nicknames. And I don't know where all of them came from necessarily, but it just makes it more interesting when everybody's got a pretty cool nickname. And, yeah, I just like trying to think of like anything in particular, just an example. There's just so many different things that, that happen. There is some rare things that'll happen every once in a while. And, you know, you're just like, wow, what is that all about? You know, what happened there exactly? And because you haven't seen it before, or it's just, you know, very, very rare. I do remember one of our guys named James. And what's his nickname now? I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah, he has this really bizarre long nickname, like Death Before something or other or whatever. It's really long. So a lot of people just call him Death because they just don't want to go through the whole nickname that he's got.
But anyway,
he forgot his – the guy forgot his cleats, right? And so, you know, I offered to let him use my tennis shoes, but I don't know if they were the right size or not. I think they were probably too big for him, but – so he didn't have his cleats, and he just played barefoot. So he was running around the bases, and he literally just—I mean—he got to home. One point, he slid it in home plate barefoot, and that home plate is not a—it's like, you know—it's kind of a heavy, kind of a—you know—you don't want to hit that with your bare feet necessarily.
Right.
But this guy, he handled it pretty well. I was like, wow, man, that must have hurt, you know. So. But yeah, that was interesting seeing someone play barefoot and play very well, I might add, barefoot.
You know, I've encountered a couple of barefoot guys in my days, and they always seem to they always talk so glowingly about being barefoot, how it's so much better, and they tend not to go back to wearing cleats. But it's not something I will ever do for sure.
Yeah, I won't ever do that either. I'm afraid my feet would get hurt pretty significantly. Get injured, but yeah, he's usually plays third base, and he's got a good arm. He can get it over to first really well. But yeah, he was playing barefoot the whole. I think he played actually a doubleheader or at least one game, and the whole time barefoot and just running around and everything else is just kind of like, wow, you know. I mean, you know, you just worry about getting hurt when you slide or something on that. But yeah, he didn't seem to affect his play at all, so that was good for him. Yeah. He was on my team, so I was pretty excited about it.
You know, I've played third sometimes where I've got hit on the toe by a line drive or something. I just thinking about a barefoot player at third base has me a little flustered right now. I'm a little,
yeah.
Wow,
I hear you, man. Seriously, takes a little guts, man.
Hey, you guys got a lot of Major League Baseball out there in California. Do you have a favorite team out there?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I'm from Baltimore originally, so I'm a long-suffering Baltimore Orioles fan. I've been a fan of the team since I was, you know, born and raised in Baltimore in that area. So I always liked Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray. Grew up with them, and you know, I've stuck with them. I've been out here in California for some time now, since basically 2008, and I was out here before from 2000 to 2006. So I've been out here pretty much most of the last 20 years, other than a couple of years, so 18 of the last 20 years or so. And no, I haven't adopted the San Francisco Giants or Oakland A's, although I probably wish I had, because the Giants ended up winning like 3 World Series in 5 years.
Yes.
But yeah, the Orioles have been my team. I stuck with them. They're in that full tank, tank and rebuild mode, where they're losing 100-plus games. And I'm hoping there's a light at the end of the tunnel with that, where they can get it going again, get back to the playoffs. They did have that little run in from 2012 to 2016, where they won more games than any team in the American League under Buck Showalter and got to the playoffs a few times, but it always ended in some disappointment or something. but yeah, I follow the major leagues pretty good. I've been a fan of it for a long time. And I'll stick with the Orioles, even though they're gonna lose a lot of games this year, I'm sure. But you know, sometimes all the pain in the end will be worth it if they do end up winning the World Series. They haven't won since 1982, which was Cal Ripken's rookie year. So that's a long time ago. But I know there's teams out there that have gone longer, like the Indians. And I have a friend who's an Indians fan, and so I basically say, well, we've won the World Series more recently than them. But
would you say it's safe to say if the Orioles didn't get Cal Ripken, that nobody in the world would care about the Orioles?
I think a lot of people wouldn't even know. Orioles, are they a team? You know, are they even a team? You know, they play in the same division with the Yankees and the Red Sox. Oh, okay. Now I know who you're talking about.
I'm trying to go through my head the famous Baltimore Orioles when I was growing up, and there was Cal Ripken, there was Eddie Murray, like you mentioned, and God, they're.
Oh yeah, I mean
it's, Mike Boddicker.
Mike Messina was pretty good.
Messina.
Actually, Tejada. Mike Messina, when he was a rookie, I got his autograph down on the field. It was early 90s. He ended up being a really good player for the Orioles and pitched 20 years, 11 years for the Orioles and 9 for the Yankees, and a Hall of Famer. And, I hoped he would go in as an Oriole, but he went in as a no team because he didn't want to, upset the Orioles or the Yankees. So he chose no team. But, that was probably one of my favorite Orioles, you know, but it was like so painful to watch him go play for the Yankees. So, there's a few players they've had over the years.
Tell me your thoughts on the Derek Jeter home run. You know what I'm talking about.
Derek Jeter home run?
The Derek Jeter home run to right field that would have went right into the glove of the right fielder if it wasn't for Jeffrey Mayer.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. The old playoff game where that was brutal. That was pretty rough. I mean, and you know that what's interesting about that is the guy in the stands that took the ball took the ball out of Tony Tarasco's hand as he was trying to jump up to catch that ball, ended up basically it was a Yankee fan of course, but that person who did that ended up in the Orioles farm system as a minor league player at one point. So if that isn't crazy, I don't know what is. But yeah, that was pretty upsetting at the time. I felt like it was definitely fan interference and really impacted the game. And it felt like the Orioles were robbed big time on that. So yeah, that's pretty stuff. That goes along with some of the other painful sports memories. But I definitely remember that vividly.
All right, we're going to run through. I just looked up some Baltimore Orioles trivia. So we're going to run through some of these and find out just how much of a fan you really are.
Okay. Sounds good.
Here we go. Who led the Orioles in home runs in 2005?
2005. Wow. Okay, let me think. That was a while ago. Wow, let me think. That's got to be... Shoot, you really got me on this one. I don't know, maybe Rafael Palmeiro or
it is Melvin Mora.
Oh wow, Melvin Mora. Okay, it's a former New York Met. Yeah, I would not have thought that he had a little bit of power, but I think he stole some bases too.
Well, it was only 27. Miguel Tejada and Jay Gibbons had 26. That year.
Yes. Oh, yes. Of course. Yep. Miguel Tejada, who ended up, I think he was one of the steroid guys. Same with Jay Gibbons, too, actually. They were both implicated on steroids at some point. But but I think Melvin Mora never was. So that was a tough
thing. Not with 27 home runs.
That wasn't a very good team, though. I do remember that being a pretty bad baseball team. So.
Next question.
As you can imagine. With your...
Who pitched the first no-hitter in Orioles history?
Oh, boy. Well... It would have to be, let me think. I'm going to go out and say probably maybe Jim Palmer.
It was Hoyt Wilhelm in 1958.
Yeah, that's going a little further back than that. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, he was a great pitcher for them. I just don't really have much knowledge of his abilities because I didn't follow them. I obviously wasn't around back then, but I did look at history books and things like that. Yeah, that makes sense. I've heard of him.
All right. When the Orioles won the 1983 World Series, it only took them 5 games. Who pitched the only game they lost?
Well, let's see. I know Jim Palmer was on the team. Probably was Dave McNally, Mike Boddicker. No, Mike. I'm going to say Palmer because even as good as he was, you know, he probably could take a loss every once in a while. So I'm going to go with Jim Palmer.
It was Scott McGregor. Does that name ring a bell?
Scotty McGregor. Okay. 0-3. All right.
What was the name of the manager that was fired with 2 months left in the 2005 season?
I want to say Phil Reagan.
No, Lee Mazzilli.
Oh, Lee Mazzilli. Okay. Yeah, they went through, from the, in the 2000s, they went through managers constantly. It was hard to keep up. So,
it surprised me.
I don't think he lasted more than maybe a season and a half or something. Maybe a couple seasons, but yeah, most of the managers we had back then didn't last very long.
Who caught the last out of the World Series in 1983?
Caught the last out?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to say...
If you don't get this one right. If you don't get this one right.
I'm going to go with Cal Ripken.
It is Cal Ripken.
Yeah, I do remember that. I mean, I remember that highlight. You know, of course, it's got to be Cal.
You've probably seen that. I've probably seen the highlight and not even known what I was looking at. But you've probably seen that highlight hundreds of times.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Hey, it says here that you do watch a lot of the streaming devices. What do you watch and what do you recommend right now?
Yeah, I mostly watch things on Netflix, occasionally on Amazon. But, Netflix, I like a variety of different things. Right now I'm watching Better Call Saul, which is like a prequel to the Breaking Bad series.
Sure.
And it's pretty good series. It's kind of like interesting. I think what I like about it is it has every element to it. It's got the action adventure aspect. It's very suspenseful. There's definitely a lot of drama in it. And there's even some funny moments with Bob Odenkirk, the star of the show. So, I mean, it's kind of got it all. And that's probably why I like it. I like it actually better than the Breaking Bad series, which a lot of people really liked. And I like suspenseful kind of shows, too. There's a show on Netflix called You that's pretty suspenseful and kind of modern and in the social media kind of world and stuff like that. And I do like some comedies and things like that too. I like a couple comedies, The Neighborhood, which is, I think it's on a CBS station, but I got rid of the cable a while ago. And just went with the streaming devices. And I have an antenna on my roof so I can still watch the football games through that, so I don't have to pay for that. So it comes in handy. I think I've saved a fair bit of money just going with the streaming devices and the antenna for sports and stuff. But, I watch, like right now, watching a lot of basketball games too. I like the Clippers. They've been my team for a long time. And finally, they've got a decent team where I think that they're going to get a chance of actually going somewhere this year. I watch some sports like football and baseball and basketball pretty much, but then I'll catch an occasional show or movie too as well.
Chris Paul, overrated?
Chris Paul, I think he maybe a little bit overrated, yeah, because in the playoffs there always seemed to be a meltdown or there was injuries that would always seem to kind of take away the opportunity. I mean, they actually led the Houston Rockets, the Clippers did, with 3-0 in the semifinals to go to the Western Conference Finals, and they ended up losing the series 4-3. And I was just like, that was totally devastating because everybody figured, that you're up 3-0. All you need to do is win one game. You can't do it. So I would go a little overrated on that for him. Yeah, definitely. And now he's on Oklahoma City's team. But so I think, we ended up playing him one time in a server rematch. They got a few former Clippers on their team. So,
I always thought he was overrated, and then he went to Houston and couldn't get along there, and now he's on Oklahoma City. I'm sure he's not going to stick around there.
I don't think so. I think he's kind of past his prime at this point too. I think he's kind of there was a window there where he was with the Clippers where they could have won a championship, and I think, like I said, they kind of just choked at times there. Chris Paul was kind of the leader on that team, so it was kind of disappointing to see that. Always liked his game before he came to the Clippers and was excited when he came to the team, but it definitely made a difference having him on the team. But I think they just couldn't seem to get over the hump in the playoffs. He just didn't seem to have what it took. And then, like I said, went to Houston and didn't work out very well there. So I think he's going to probably be with another team at some point because I think he's just in Oklahoma City for a little while. But yeah, I'm real excited about the team we have right now with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and we just got Marcus Morris from the 76ers, or I think it was 76ers.
I think so.
Yeah, I can't remember now, but he was Yeah, but he's pretty good too. So they actually have five guys on their team right now that are averaging over 18 points a game.
Patrick Beverly's a little annoying, don't you think?
Yeah, that's kind of native. He's a great. You love him if he's on your team. You hate him if he's not on your team because he just pesters you.
He's a modern day Dennis Rodman.
He is definitely that. Yeah,
he does everything.
I love him because he's on my team.
He does everything, and
he
annoys the hell out of
me. I probably wouldn't. Exactly. So I love him as a guy who will pester. And actually, the Clippers last year when they played the Warriors in the first round, he was. You know, between him and some of the others on the team, he was just constantly pestering them, and they held up pretty good against the Warriors. I think they took it to the full amount of games in the first round series, and the Clippers were the 8th seed, and the Warriors were the 1 seed. So to be able to play, you know, force the Warriors to go to the full amount of games to win was incredible. And I think that was one of the things that Kawhi Leonard was like, yeah, I want to play with these guys, you know, bring Paul George in and see what we can do. Because you got some of these guys like Patrick Beverly and Montrezl Harrell that just, you know, they're fighters. They're battle, you know, pester you.
So I would assume your pick.
Kind of fun to watch that.
I would assume your pick for the NBA championship is the Clippers. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I think so. I feel good about it. I think a lot of people think the Lakers with LeBron and Anthony Davis. But I think the Clippers, you know, they got a little more depth, I think, than the Lakers. So I would say Clippers. And I think the Bucks in the Eastern Conference are going to go because they're just really having a great season. I think I have a lot of good players as well.
Who do you got?
Giannis is the
who do you got for a pick who do you got to win the World Series this year? You can go on record right now.
This is painful to say for me as an Orioles fan, but I think in reality is I think the Yankees have a very good team. I think they've got a lot of depth. They've got a little bit more pitching now too to go with their fearsome lineup. And I think the Dodgers are going to be right there. I mean, picking up Mookie Betts from the Red Sox is huge. They were already a very good team that won 108 games last year. So adding Mookie Betts to the fold, you know, I think it's going to be Dodgers and Yankees, which, you know, baseball probably likes as those large market teams. I mean, if they were set a salary cap, you know, it might be a little more challenging for those teams out of those big cities. But I think the reality is it'll probably be the Yankees and the Dodgers in the World Series. And if I had to pick a winner, I'd say Dodgers. I just feel like they've got – this is going to be their year. They were kind of cheated out of a couple of years there.
How many times –
I'm not a Dodgers fan.
How many times do you think the Astro players are going to get hit this year? If you – Jose Altuve.
Everywhere. Everywhere they go, every stadium they go, they're going to be hearing some boos and some – you know, they're going to be asked the questions from the media in that market. And so it's going to be a pretty miserable go-around. So, you know – people were, you know, saying, well, they didn't get punished, which is true. But, you know, reality is they're going to be facing the music everywhere they go. And it's going to be pretty rough for them. And I would say also, you know, there's going to be thoughts, you know, down the road as far as, like, does someone belong in the Hall of Fame if they were involved in this cheating scandal? So I think that's all those things are going to play a factor. And so, you know, they get what they deserve, essentially. it's going to be a tough season for them, I think.
Yeah, I think Jose Altuve is going to get hit a world record amount of times.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen too. I think there's going to be a fair bit of that going on too. So it should be interesting from that perspective. But they've got a good team. But then again, who knows what they really are? You know, unless you know you can see them without the
that's right.
advantages that they have. You know, so
yeah, those splits are going to be a lot different this year. I don't even think they're going to make the playoffs. They got a built-in excuse.
Yeah,
I don't.
I don't think so either. I think the Oakland A's are actually the local team here. Is got a good chance of winning that division, and I hope they do. They're a small market team, and they've had some success over the Billy Bean era. And I kind of like to see them get somewhere. So I'm thinking the A's are gonna take the West. But, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of Giants fans probably wouldn't want to hear me say I think the Dodgers are going to win the World Series here. But I think the reality is, they've got the team on paper, I think, that should be able to win it.
All right, John, we're gonna end it right there. I want to thank you for coming on the Roller Out the Barrel podcast. I'm sure you guys haven't heard of it out there, but I'm sure everyone out there is going to be interested in listening to this interview. And around here, we just love listening about vintage baseball. So we're about to get an introduction to John Heil. John, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Game show is brought to you by... Christ, I can't find it. The hell with it.